Hi, I'm Kate.
And I'm Phil.
And this is The Underground, the podcast for garden sector professionals and the official podcast partner of Glee 2024.
In this special collection of episodes, we'll be sharing over 20 interviews that we recorded live from our podcast booth at Glee this year, offering fresh insights from the innovators and trailblazers that keep the garden sector growing.
So, without further ado, let's get down and dirty.
Although getting to grips with market analytics may seem daunting, understanding industry data can offer a variety of insights to help improve sales. Today on the show, we thought we'd get the perspective of two experts in the field of data analytics. Later, we'll be speaking with David Denny from the HTA. But first, we hope you enjoy our conversation with Anthony Creeby, a customer success manager from GfK.
Hi, guys. Good to meet you.
Hi. Afternoon, Anthony.
So, Anthony, why don't we kick off by you telling us a little bit more about what GfK actually does.
Yeah, great. Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me to start with.
You're welcome.
So, as you say, my name's Anthony. I work at GfK. GfK are a market research company, okay, which provides insights across a whole range of categories. Obviously, today I'm here talking around the garden categories, right. But the reach is far wider than that in terms of, sort of consumer electronics, household appliances. The home and garden being the focus for today. And we provide insights that we receive from retailers. We then aggregate our data we receive from retailers to be able to inform a market, which we can then provide back to our clients. We work across both the sort of point of sale data delivery, as well as we can look at consumer data as well, and sort of ask consumers what they reason for purchase type questions as well. So, yeah.
Okay.
Goodness me. So any data analysis is only as reliable as the numbers you have. So where do you get the data from that you use?
We receive our data from our whole range of retailers, large and small, so multiples and independents, online and traditional in-store sales.
Right.
And like I say, we receive that data. It comes in which we can aggregate. We can then report back to a retailer client on their performance. We'd never obviously report any other retailer's performance to another retailer, for clear confidentiality reasons. And then we also work with manufacturers as well, who can look at the data from, let's say, a growing media or compost perspective,
right,
and understand their position in that market versus their competitors. And then from there, we can also drill down and look at sort of a real deeper level of that, so features of a product, be that peat-free versus peat-based, as I was speaking about earlier today, or glyphosate-free within weed killers versus glyphosate, and actually a little bit further than that even, to say, right, what price points are we seeing the biggest growth in, pack sizes, and even what SKUs, so what items are driving the market.
So is this EPOS data that you're using? You don't actually send people out to the stores to do traditional market research, you know, with pad and pen?
Yeah. So that's a very good question. And I think in a very, very, very small number of cases, there are a very small handful of retailers who we do have a sort of a field team who would probably go out and have those relationships and maybe a little bit of a pad and pen. But that is very, very much like a sort of a dwindling, shall we say,
right,
number of retailers. Mm-hmm. And a lot of our retailers are absolutely vast majority, I'd say, sort of 99% are descending in those EPOS sales.
Can I just interrupt, as Phil often interrupts me when I get a bit horticultural? Can you just explain what EPOS is?
Yeah, sure. So, EPOS are electronic point of sales. So the sales that go through the till. So there's sort of no what are you planning on purchasing or what might you have purchased. It's more a case of what has been a retailer sold,
right,
going through their till system, which we then receive. And we can then use that data to form our market.
So. Yeah, so it's incredibly accurate, because anything that goes through the till, basically you get that data.
Yeah, and I guess there's an element to it which is probably sort of important to make a point as well, is that we don't receive data from every single retailer in the entire UK. So there's certain elements where there will be retailers who aren't, or channels that maybe aren't feeding in. Mm-hmm. And we're always very clear with sort of our data is based on our GfK read of the market, which we'll never say is 100% of the market,
because
obviously that's misleading, isn't it? But it certainly gives a very, very good indication of sort of where the market's going and what maybe are the opportunities in the market. And also helping from a retailer perspective, and a little bit earlier we were discussing the ranging. So quite interestingly, sort of, what are the top selling models? Therefore, if you can only have 8 models or 10 models of weed killer in a smaller garden centre, for example, mm-hmm. like, how are you going to find out what those are and which ones are working well? Obviously, that then allows you to have those conversations with the manufacturer to supply those into you. They might be harder conversations, but the point is we can look at that to give you that steer from our read.
Great, okay. So in technology terms, AI is the big buzzword. It's been, you know, it's everywhere. So have you seen that AI is playing a more, you know, more significant role in predictions and suggestions that you're able to give to your clients?
Yes. So very good question. Very big question, isn't it?
Yeah.
And you're right, it's becoming ever more important. Mm-hmm. And yeah, for sure, we're seeing more AI coming into all of the categories that we work across and even sort of coming into our garden and sort of home areas as well. And yeah, it's definitely coming more and helping. We've launched a new platform recently which uses AI to give recommendations. So when clients log in, they can quite quickly look at a category such as lawnmowers, for example, and within that then see a recommendation or just a highlight. So actually in the last month, this has happened. This part of the market's grown by X percent. And maybe a brand has done this. So it allows, from a very quick sort of top-line perspective, someone to see who logs into that from another manufacturer. So what's happened? And that will continue to progress. And that'll be more of a thing that will be across all our industries, I think, more and more leaned on, more important. But I also think there's that point where unless you teach a machine somewhere to learn everything, mm-hmm. especially in our industries, it's very difficult to, how did you know what the weather's going to do next year? Yeah. And if we do have a really poor bank holidays again next week, you have to then sort of start programming a bit of that back in.
Right. Yeah.
And even like big events, we talk a lot around things like sort of World Cups or football tournaments or any football in general, really, big events. Obviously things like Wimbledon maybe happening every year, maybe not quite as much, but there's definitely events triggering performance.
Things
like that. And again, you'd have to start programming a lot of that in. So that potentially is, I think, what you could do. But there's also an element for me of, as a sort of going out and meeting our clients and presenting data back, they're the sort of overlays that I can put on top of it that maybe AI can't do. It can flag to them, hi guys, and alert, quickly be aware that this is going on.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I think the AI piece goes as far as doing a really good job, but allowing still that human element, isn't there?
So is the garden industry one of the hardest industry to work with because of those kind of variables?
Yeah, the unpredictability.
Yeah, you're right. And it is. It really is. And sort of in the slightly wider remit, things like DIY as well, I sort of have my eye across as well. But you're right.
Okay.
If you look at things like, I know, fridge freezers and washing machines, if it rains, you're still going to buy one if you need one. If it breaks, you're still buying it.
However,
if it's poor weather and you think, actually, I'll put that task on the next weekend or it's not going to be the right weekend to cut the grass, is it, because it's rained? And it only has to be, as we're all aware, sort of a certain sort of period of the year that it rains within, or it's bad weather. Bank holidays and sort of the like, really. And how do you get those sales back?
And because Easter changes all the time as well, you can't predict for that, which is usually one of the biggest weekends.
And if that's a poor weather weekend.
So what are the key metrics that you were measuring?
So we look at total level, so the sort of the value, volume and ASP, so average selling price.
Right.
And then we can then delve like a little deeper from that to look at that by channel level. And then the drivers, like I say, so we can look at things like distribution. So actually has a particular product within, say, the weaker market done well because actually it's been more widely distributed? Has it seen a reduction in price compared to other products in the market? And it's adding all those different metrics together to actually say the reason behind the performance might be that it was seeing a 25% uplift in distribution, a price reduction, and therefore it's beaten its competitor or helped beat its competitor by doing that. But yeah, our main measures to start with that, and also sort of slightly wider in our data, and so just outside of POS, we have our consumer confidence, which again is always a really important measure, which we release every month. And not that I work on the consumer confidence side, but it's definitely another measure which everyone potentially would have heard of ahead of maybe hearing GfK talking about weed killers.
Can you just give us a little bit of an explanation about what that is?
Yeah, sure. So our consumer confidence works with a panel of consumers on a monthly basis and asks them a range of questions around sort of their how confident they feel or how happy they feel with their personal financial situation. How do they think the next 12 months will play out for them financially, better or worse? How likely are they to make a major purchase? So it may be a bigger, more expensive barbecue or a more expensive lawnmower or actually a fridge freezer. And then we compile all that information together to give us a score and be able to say, right, as a whole, The consumer confidence is at the moment minus 13.
Right.
And although it sounds terrible because it's minus, we're quite a pessimistic nation.
Right.
And minus 10 is our average score.
Okay.
It hasn't been positive for a while, but we can then release it every month to, it goes out in the press just to give that feel to help with all these other sort of headlines we have about how consumers are feeling themselves.
All right. So now might be a good time to ask you whether you could give us an example of how one of your customers might use these insights that you're providing to them.
Yeah, definitely. So we will, quite often when we speak with clients, we'll normally start around that sort of wider market piece of that consumer confidence. What are the other factors, the housing market being a challenge, convenience, sustainability. So start on those wider pieces and sort of drill down a bit further from that to work out actually how they're performing in a particular category. What is the reason if they launched the new products or have they not? If they have launched, it's quite interesting then to do a piece of or their next sort of insight piece we deliver. Has that new model that you've launched had a sort of the desired effect? Have you seen your share grow?
Okay.
It's also working with clients to work out what they're trying to achieve. So actually measurable in terms of actually we'd like to get our share from X to Y or actually this is what we are doing in the next 6 months. So we'd be interested to see if that promotional activity maybe is coming through. So they use our data from the perspective of their performance versus market. So actually market's down 5% in say compost and they're up 5%, great. Or actually if it's the reverse, who's winning? Who's actually taken that from me? The market might be doing really, really well. And that's because there's been a new, other new brand coming or a new model launched. You've actually had to come out of a particular retailer, maybe from a brand perspective. And from a retailer perspective, they can use the data in a similar way to sort of see themselves versus a market that they would operate within. So it's using that benchmarking and then working out what the cause of their challenges or actually their success as it is in quite a lot of cases.
Can you see kind of changes quite happening quite swiftly, especially within garden with the weather or something? Do the changes happen? Is it quite obvious to see, or do you just have to wait until the end of a certain period before you give that data back?
Yeah, so we can report our insights on a in most of our cases monthly basis. In some in some cases we can look at it weekly, but in the majority of cases we're looking at monthly performances. And yeah, so we can look at it for a period of time at the sort of 2 weeks after that month end. Granted, in some cases, like you said, Easter, it's trying to align the certain weeks because there's no point looking at a month which includes Easter one and not the other because you get some really odd trends. But yes, we can see if we say looked at Q1 of the year, start going, right, how was Q1 performing year on year? And see that play out. And even if we looked at it by more of a weekly breakdown, what week did drive that performance?
Yeah,
and it's really interesting because you do see as soon as the weather either takes a turn for the better or worst, consumers either stay inside and don't buy those outdoor products or actually maybe move some of that spend indoors. So things like cake stands, cake decorations, more of those sort of homewares or something, actually cushions, throws, people. And again, this is another point we discussed earlier, is the sort of low-cost refresh. So consumers not having to spend, like they might have had, I know their garden might have had a new patio laid after COVID. So that's great. And they spent a bit of money there or landscape the garden. But now they're using, I know, some aggregates. They might buy some sort of bags, smaller bags of either stones or some solar lights or something. It doesn't cost you £700 or £800.
Yeah.
And the same internally, people buying a diffuser or buying some cushions or ornaments. It's again, that's when you come in and you go, oh, that looks nice.
And it
feels like you spent a good bit of money, but it's just a bit of a low cost refresh, as we call it. So
low cost refresh, I like that.
So how are the outdoor and garden markets in general performing at the moment?
So yes, it's been challenging. So if we look at what we call our MAT or a moving annual total, so sort of a rolling 12-month picture, taking us into June this year versus that 12 months prior to that, the market for garden has declined. It's seeing a bigger decline in unit terms than it is in value, and quite a lot of that. So we're seeing things around about four. It depends how we sort of look at the market. We were looking around sort of 4% down in unit terms and around 1-2% in value terms. And it's coming down to that average selling price increase. The cost of manufacturing, cost of shipping all these products is going up, and that's going to one person and one person only, the consumer really, isn't it? So we're spending more in a lot of cases to either keep the same level of what we had before, or in a lot of cases get less for our money. So the markets are mainly driven by that at the moment. And it's again, a very similar picture across a lot of our categories. There was a bit of an uptick in unit performance in consumer electronics, mainly driven by Euro 2024 build-up.
Okay.
Yeah.
The market as a whole for garden is seeing a bigger decline in units and in value. So it's tough. But again, if you segment that down and look at things like outdoor living, As soon as, and this is quite an interesting point, as soon as the weather does turn, the demand is there straight away. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So when it's not really like a new barbecue, granted, is a bit more expensive, yeah, maybe, but if you're looking at a deck chair or some cushions or some furniture, which is maybe reduced because we've missed maybe that period of time, mm-hmm, where the weather's been bad, mm-hmm, as soon as we get a nice weekend, people are straight in. And that's right, what I find really interesting. Okay. They don't hang around at times.
No. Yeah.
That more impulse purchase is, yeah, really, so it's how do you position yourself ready for that?
Yeah.
So are you saying that like a big event like the Euros, like a football event especially, mm-hmm, is a real key driver for people purchasing for the garden?
Yeah, so I think
that's amazing.
Yeah, so it's one of those things we look at as hopefully it will drive. Again, the weather's very, it's weather dependent, yeah, isn't it? So this, yeah, year we were hoping that barbecues potentially would do quite well,
mm-hmm,
along with some of those other outdoor categories. And the weather didn't really turn up for the Euros when we were here, so a lot of people just ended up having their mates around for a pizza maybe, yeah, in the house.
And, yeah, the pubs did quite well.
Yes, I was about to say, the pubs did very well out of it. But yes, so we do look at those events and going, right, what actually happened that year? And was there anything else? And granted, we're not going to see a market swing 10 or 15% based on the football, no, taking place or not.
No.
But definitely, if there is a major event like that, like you said, the Olympics and the weather, mm-hmm, aligns, we can see upticks in certain categories. Again, maybe not a total garden, but within subcategories of garden, mm-hmm, we do see that coming through. And again, that sort of plays back further. So if you've got nice weather and you've got friends and family coming over for the football, yeah, and you're having a barbecue, mm-hmm, you might be doing those preparation jobs ahead of them coming over.
Yeah.
So actually, I better plant out those plants that have been sitting on the side, or I better get sleeping up, or, yeah, better do that lawn. It's all those sort of, it's a snowball kind of effect, isn't it? Of,
okay,
the garden prep ahead of the garden being used.
Yeah. But we could be having this conversation next year at Glee after having an amazing summer, mm-hmm, and you could be, yeah, the market's great, this has happened. So it's really, it's quite interesting, isn't it?
Yeah.
Must do your head in sometimes.
It's, yeah, it's really, really challenging because yeah, it is. It's and from our perspective, I often feel for sort of retailers and manufacturers, I guess, sort of quite often the retail side as well, it's sort of, it's really challenging. Like,
yeah,
you can have all this stock ready,
yes,
and all the sales are being, like, from a manufacturer side, have been sold out,
yeah,
and then that's it for the end of the year. You might be expecting some rebuys in, but yeah, the weather is obviously that massively dominating factor. But along with the other ones, like I say, like housing and other sort of factors impacting consumers purchasing.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's multifaceted.
Yes, indeed.
So you're the customer success manager, okay? So does that, do you then get given data from your data analysts? And then you have to convert that into, okay, well, if that's the data I'm being given, and that's what you're saying, I can then give that, I give it that spin, or, you know, that's going to mean something to my customer, and I can, yeah, tell them that. Or do your data analysts give you that as a sort of, they've already done that work? Do you understand?
Yeah,
what I'm,
yeah, definitely. So a lot of it is. I say on me, it's in my role. So
okay,
we'll have all the sort of operations team do all the processing of getting data combined, getting it all split out, getting it all into, so as you can imagine, retailer X sending in a massive feed of data, of which a portion of that will be relevant to me and a, mm-hmm, portion of that will be relevant to all my colleagues.
Okay.
So I will then receive that data, which I can then use to try and help answer clients' questions, whether,
right,
that be from a retailer or manufacturer perspective.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And a lot of it is worked on the basis of, we're getting a question regarding a performance of this, can you help us understand,
mm-hmm,
have we done as well as we thought we'd done internally? Because obviously a lot of our clients are seeing their own data performance or their own,
yep,
sales from their own internal figures. So yeah, so my role would then be sort of pulling that together, getting the story and trying to deliver back something insightful and actionable in kind of, not in as small a deck as possible, but you don't really want to be talking for 3 hours to someone,
no,
about compost. You want to be going, like, this is what's happening, this is what you're doing.
Oh, I do.
Yeah, sorry, that was a bad thing to say, wasn't it? I would love to, with you, talk about it for 3 hours. And then the lunch comes in. It's trying to get into that as well, in terms of that insight for them. And opportunities, all of it, again, is great. Even if you have grown 10%, how do we grow 15%? It's never, as we know, it's never enough, is it?
So is it quite an American kind of thing that you're doing? I mean, a customer success manager isn't a very British job role. Is that kind of an American thing, or is it just what you do, what GFK do?
Yes. Very good question. And my role, yeah, so I'd have probably been known probably about a year ago or 2 years ago as an account manager.
Okay, right.
So then sort of job roles change. We've also had sort of a change in terms of Nielsen is GfK Nielsen now. Nielsen IQ, should I say, and GfK. So, so I think there's been some sort of terminologies that have maybe come across. So, yeah. Yes. So I've become now a CSM.
Because it's quite, you've got shoes to fill, haven't you? Calling yourself a success manager.
Pressure on.
Yeah.
No, absolutely. Because I am a gardener guru, but for Evergreen, I was the garden guru. And it is, it's quite a lot of pressure,
Definitely.
You've got to be the one that knows everything.
Yeah, you walk in with that on your job title.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And I'm a success manager. And then if the numbers aren't so good,
And there does come that too, doesn't it? Yeah. There's an element of, and it's not spin, but it's trying to find still a positive. Because there's no one wants to hear everything's terrible. No. Actually, your performance isn't very good either. It's trying to work out, actually, you're doing very well in maybe this part of your market.
Right.
So then how do you maybe do that elsewhere?
Yeah.
Or understanding ahead of time, actually, we know that client X has a little bit of a challenge issue with something. Right. So instead of sort of playing on the thing of, oh, you've had a challenge, it's more okay, so we know what's happened.
Yeah.
But let's look where we could go this time next year.
Yeah.
Like I say, it's a little bit of a pressure on the head otherwise.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it sounds incredibly complex what you guys do as a business. Is that something that a small business could buy into? Or are you only targeting, the big companies within the sector?
Yeah, no, 100%. So we can work, or we have clients who are sort of really, really big players.
Yep.
And also those who maybe are much smaller, either retail or manufacturer. So we can work with obviously a whole range of different size clients. And from our data we receive as well, obviously, the more we receive in, the better that is as well for everyone involved. So,
of course,
as soon as we can increase coverage a little more in a particular area and we can report back, we're getting slightly closer to the absolute market truth, so to speak.
Yeah.
Not that anyone has that in the industry, and that's always the gap, isn't it? No one ever covers everything, and you might do something a bit better than someone else and vice versa.
Yeah.
But yeah, in short, anyone who you could have a one person selling rakes out of their garage, and if they wanted some insight, we could take their data on board and provide them insights
back. Because there's quite a few small and very new businesses at Glee this year.
Yes.
So you could actually go to say to them, look, I can really help you with your numbers and, help you know where you can start selling your products, that kind of thing. You can give that kind of new business advice.
Yeah, and I find that really exciting because I really like speaking to people who go, I've never heard of this GfK. Like, what do you do and how does it work?
Yeah.
Because it's like, this is great. Like, so for someone like yourself, you could... And it doesn't really matter, or it does matter obviously what you're selling. But let's just say you're selling hose pipes. Like, that's really interesting. Do you know how big that market is? Do you know sort of roughly how you could place that? And in some cases, it's difficult. If you're a really, really small player, it might be a case of going, we don't have an insights team at our own business.
Yeah.
Like, even if you told me that I need to range this, I wouldn't be able to buy that or I wouldn't be able to range that.
Yeah.
But definitely for me, I find it interesting where you can say to people, look, do you know how big your market is and how much it's grown?
Yeah.
And you know personally, you've grown X. So that's really interesting. And it's from a base of actually zero, isn't it? So everything's a learning.
Absolutely.
That is exciting. I look forward to that this afternoon.
Excellent.
So we are here at Glee.
Yeah.
And that's why you're going to be talking to people this afternoon. So how have you found the show so far?
Yeah, really good. Really good. It's lovely to be here again this year. Haven't been here for a couple of years, but it's lovely to be back. For the 50th anniversary as well, which is very exciting. So and to have a speaking slot as well for the first time, which is fantastic.
Well done.
So that was great. It's great to see so many people here, so many stores all set up, and great to see some faces of people that we currently work with and obviously deal with on a sort of day-to-day weekly basis, and also hopefully meet a lot of new people and sort of just even introduce them. If I can leave here today with another 100 people, not even that, maybe let's go for 20 people, let's be realistic, knowing a bit more about GfK, then that's and exciting.
Has anything caught your eye whilst you've been here?
Yes, there's been a few bits and pieces. I've headed over to the garden care. I've had a little bit of time between talking this morning and joining you here.
Yeah, you've still got the afternoon.
Yeah, so I've headed over to the garden care and there's quite a few bits going on there, and we'll be heading over to have a look in some of the sort of like GCA lounges and places like that as well. So, I saw some mini golf doing the rounds as well.
Yes,
so,
absolutely.
Yeah. If I get some time at lunch, I'll have a quick run on the mini golf. But there's a lot of new products as well, a lot of new products out there.
There are,
And I really, it's really good to see those in the flesh as well, for sure, because that's obviously innovation which we will then start to expect to come through and reflect in our data in the next season, really.
Yeah.
So I look forward to seeing that now and then seeing the performance of that.
Wonderful.
Well, I think that sounds like a really good place to leave it. So thanks so much for coming
in,
Anthony.
Thank you.
Really appreciate
it. Thank you very much for your time.
Very, yeah, really informative. I've learnt what all those acronyms that people used to say to me. And I have no idea what they were talking about. So it's
brilliant.
Great.
So enjoy the rest of the show.
Thank you very much.
Bye. Thank
you.
And now for our conversation with David Denny, the Director of Research and Insights from the HTA. Thank you for joining us. Now, if we just start with a really easy one, so could you just give us a bit of an overview of what your role entails at the HTA?
Yep, happy to. So I lead several teams in the HTA.
Okay.
As the job title suggests, it's largely on the research and insight side of things, but that's quite a wide range. We look at consumer and market trends, really to help our members with their business planning. We provide a lot of the data that we use into government, and increasingly we're getting involved in more and more scientific R&D to really help the industry become more productive, more sustainable. And
okay.
As well as that, we look after the business unit, Association of Professional Landscapers. So it's a mixed bag and a really interesting bag, really.
Right, okay.
So who's the data available to?
It's available to all HTA members on request. We push a lot of that out there, regular things like market updates, which will give you a view every month on the state of trade in garden centres. But we also run a set of benchmarking exercises that could be anything on kind of key staff wage metrics, use of water, all of those different sorts of things.
Okay, so this is the HTA. So are you primarily concerned with the growers, the people who are growing stuff, you know, the nurseries
growing
and that sort
stuff.
Of thing?
Growing
stuff. Okay, well, you know, as a non-gardener, who are growing plants, are they? Is that what we're talking about?
It's a core focus, but it's one of many. We've got about 1,300 members, and uniquely for a trade association, they go all the way through the supply chain. So we do have commercial growers in membership, but we also have around 700 retailers. That ranges from garden centres, DIY stores. I mentioned landscapers as well, and we've also got a range of garden manufacturers, and that can be anything from tools to furniture to ferts.
Okay.
Got you. So what innovations are there that are affecting how shoppers engage with gardening?
Well, I think there's a huge amount as innovations in product composition. So sustainability is real driver for consumer choice, for operations, etc. So we're seeing quite a lot of innovation around the kind of composition, the use of raw materials and packaging.
Okay.
A lot of kind of listeners will be aware of extended producer responsibilities that are coming in. And so we're seeing a lot of businesses respond to that by reducing the amount of packaging, the renewability, recyclability of it.
Okay. So for those people who aren't aware of what that is, could you just explain a little bit more about the extended responsibility scheme or whatever it was?
No, that's absolutely fine.
Whatever it was.
Yeah.
Long day.
it's an initiative that's coming in from the government, and it's really focused on packaging waste. And the overall aim of it is to, I suppose, raise funds to reinvest in the recycling infrastructure of the country. And the principle of that is that the polluter pays, as it were.
Right.
So it's already come into force and is requiring a wider range of businesses to record and report the tonnage and type of packaging that they use, and it will ultimately involve fees being paid.
So like a plastic tax, is that kind of thing?
It's along that sort of lines.
Right.
The plastic tax might be in the same family, but it's two different things.
Right.
Yeah, and it applies to all types of material, not just plastics.
Okay. So how have you been finding that businesses within the garden sector, which are traditionally maybe a little bit older fashioned than some others, are harnessing technology?
I'll challenge the view that they're traditionally old-fashioned. The presentation this morning that they were way ahead of the curve. Put a slide up 2012, and it was garden centres with the websites were among the first to embrace digital to get consumers in. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
So we've actually seen the garden centres at the forefront of that type of innovation. They're increasingly looking at social media as a way of engaging customers. Now that of course can be on promotion, but also customer service interactions. And there's a wide range of things that the garden centres are doing around that.
No, that's good to hear.
Yeah, so do you get involved in sort of looking at different technologies and advising or giving insights into how those work?
Yeah, we can do, and it ranges the span of the supply chain. So give you a very good example. We are running a Future Grow event in a few weeks' time, and that's really looking at artificial intelligence and robotics plants.
Right.
So we have a package on display there that will literally go through the fields using artificial intelligence to recognise weeds, and rather than application of pesticides, it will eliminate those weeds with a burst of intense light. So,
oh my goodness.
Sustainability.
Like a robot type thing.
That's exactly it.
Yeah.
So absolutely incredible to see huge innovations and really supporting greater sustainability in the plants that we see on the shelves.
Right.
Gosh.
And that's not just a gimmick. That's something which is going to go into production.
Is it used kind of in crops already?
It's got a background in agriculture. So field-based crops, but the fundamentals of it can be transferred over into ornamental horticulture, field produce, but potentially also in glasshouse production as well.
Goodness.
Wow, that's amazing. So how could a company or would a company use the information that you supply to help improve their business?
A lot of it's around business planning. So taking benchmarking reports, for example, one of the things at sales benchmarking level that a business can do is they can see how their performance is stacking up with businesses of similar size in a similar region and start to ask those questions. So if I'm up compared with everyone else, what am I doing right? If everyone else is up and I'm down, what am I doing wrong?
Yeah.
And of course, we put that together with business networking so that people can help each other answer those questions.
Yeah. So what are some of the opportunities that our audience can take advantage of that you give them?
Well, I think the biggest opportunity is to keep innovating for those 30 million gardeners out there. So, I mean, and it's sometimes easy to lose sight of the fact that it is a huge market with huge diversity. What we saw on the back of COVID was around 3 million new gardeners come into the market. Mm-hmm. And, of course, to some extent, that has kind of fallen away because other leisure pursuits are there. But there's a huge opportunity to engage those newer gardeners and to innovate around different formats. So one of the trends that we track is garden size and home ownership. So solutions for those younger gardeners, and by younger I essentially mean under 45 around that, for solutions that can fit into a rented garden, that can move from house to house, patio gardening. So we're seeing a lot of innovation and opportunity around those different areas.
Okay. So with any of these sort of data analyst type things, you... the data is only as good as the data, or the output is only as good as the data that you're capturing.
Yep, so absolutely.
Whereabouts do you get the data from to be able to give these insights?
We get it from multiple sources. So the way to look at a lot of our data is we build it from the bottom up and the top down. So from the bottom up, we would collect data on sales or business performance from our members. So what have their sales been this month? We've got a number of systems.
That's like an EPOS.
That's a very good example. Yep. We have one system where the EPOS data comes into an aggregated garden retail monitor and we provide those averages. Mm-hmm. But we also cross-reference that with some of the top-down data where we run consumer surveys and ask people to report, for example, how often they visit garden centres, what are they spending on. And what we tend to do is compare the two. Are they giving the same sort of picture? Are they coming to the same sort of answers? So there's quite a lot of quality control goes on around it.
Okay.
So are you able to predict trends as well with this data?
Yeah, you can predict some of those trends. The most simple one, of course, is the sun shines.
Yep.
So our sales will go up. But there are other trends that you can get into around that. So you could look at some of the longer term trends, some of the sort of macro side of things, that greater consumer desire for sustainability.
Right.
And what you can anticipate around that is changed consumer choices, changed consumer preferences. So some of the people in my team last year did a report onto the value of plants. And one of the things that showed was that consumers increasingly attaching value to plants that have been produced in a biosecure way.
Oh, okay.
So that's something where consumer awareness is probably going to increase, where there is a kind of societal need for that. So, we would anticipate that trend I suppose responsible production is absolutely critical for the industry, very probably is going to enter the consumer consciousness in the coming years.
Ah, interesting. So you mentioned earlier about AI being literally used out in the field, which I quite like. Are you using AI for as part of your data analysis, or are you either currently, or are you sort of looking at that as something maybe you might use in the future?
No, we're both. We are using it, and we're also looking at how we might make more use of it.
Right.
So to give you an example, a lot of your listeners will be familiar with the National Garden Gift Card Scheme that we run. You would not believe the amount of analysis and choice and agonising that goes into the choice of designs on those cards.
Really?
Everyone's got their favourite. And one of the things that we did for the first time this year was run some consumer research that was mediated by an AI. Mm-hmm. So 20 consumers in the demographic for purchase were given different sets of possible new designs. Right. And they were interviewed by the AI. Of course, they knew this was going on. There's all sorts of research ethics about that. And that really helped us slash a traditional market research project, which might have taken, 4 to 6 weeks, down to 48 hours and about a tenth of the cost.
Wow.
And we didn't let the AI run wild. We did a kind of traditional survey just to calibrate the results. Very similar answers. We're starting to use that, and there's far more potential in terms of generative AI, and some of the big data analysis.
Yes, I can imagine. Yeah, being able to use that to help some of the algorithms that you use to come up with those insights and the data that you've got.
Absolutely, and it's those deeper insights. So yes, at one level, we analyse the EPOS data and we'll tell whether sales are up or down. Mm-hmm. Where it gets a lot more powerful is looking at those sorts of trends in linked sales. To give one example, we've been able to use that data to speak to government around the transition to peat.
Peat-free.
Oh, goodness me, of course. Well done, my spot is. But that gives that big data and looks at, what are the categories may well be impacted in the basket around that. Verts, pots for the plants to go into. Mm-hmm. So it builds up that big insight about how the whole system works together.
Mm-hmm. Are you a data analyst by trade, or
I am. Started off in market research, in a completely different industry, educational IT, market research by training.
And have you been with the HTA for long?
Been about 14 years now.
I'd say that's quite long. So this probably isn't your first visit to GLEE then?
No, it's not. I'm something of a regular.
So how are you finding it this year, and what kind of conversations are you having with people?
There's been a real buzz about it, I think.
That's what everybody says.
So I think we've kind of come off the back of COVID, where all of a sudden we didn't have our trade shows. And of course, there's not quite the first excitement of everyone being able to meet each other, but I think that has been carried through. And what I've kind of picked up from GLEE today is just a huge amount of excitement about being able to kind of meet peers, meet colleagues in the industry, see and get excited about what's coming up for next season. New products, new concepts, sharing of insights. So I'd say it's been a tough season, there's been no doubt about
really tough but
I think that that kind of cautious optimism for next year as well is coming through.
Great. Have you had a chance to look around the show at all, or
I've had a little bit of a look but I think one of the beauties of shows like this is you never quite see it all. You'll pick up with someone afterwards and say, did you see this? And it's like, what was it like? I think the kind of the after effects of GLEE are still to come. It'd be good.
Did anything catch your eye while you were looking around?
Yes, it's the short answer. Huge amounts of things. There is particularly innovative piece. One of the things that we know is a challenge for gardeners at the moment is irrigating plants with peat-free and peat-reduced mixes. Really interesting, simple device that you just pop into it.
Could that be the exact one? We've been talking to Steve Harper.
Really
interesting, isn't it? Yeah.
And one of the things a researcher you look for is what you call really, really elegant solutions to complex problems.
Simple solutions.
That caught my eye. But by no means the only thing. There's such a lot of innovation in this industry. It's always a pleasure.
Fantastic. Well, do you know what? I think we have rattled through that, but I think we've pretty much covered everything that we wanted to talk to you about. Is there anything else that you feel that our listeners might want to know at the moment? Or did that cover most of the things that you talked about in your in the talk that you gave?
Yeah, I think that covered most of the things in the talk. But you know, if there's any other questions on market research data, anything that
comes up,
listeners want to know, yeah, then very happy to talk to them always.
Wonderful.
Brilliant. Well, thanks so much, David, for joining us today, and good luck with the rest of the show.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Thanks very much.
Thanks very much.
We hope you enjoyed this episode. If you did, could I ask a small favour? Please take the time to review the show and share us with your colleagues. It really does make a difference and will help others to find us too. To keep up to date with the latest happening from the Underground, sign up to our email newsletter at theunderground.fm. I'm Kate Turner, the Gardener Guru. I'm a horticulturist, garden consultant, and presenter. To find out more, check out my website at gardenerguru.co.uk.
And I'm Phil Wright, founding partner of Wright O'Barra, a creative marketing agency specialising in the home and garden sectors. And for anyone bringing a new product to market, we've created a handy 7-step guide to help take your product marketing from zero to hero. Find out more at wrightobarra.com.